The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in the 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. To continue with the Lotus Sutra, I've been giving you a very brief synopsis, kind of a sketch as we go, just trying to point out some of the teachings in this sutra. But as I said, there's a whole lot more than I'm talking about because it's so vast in scope and it's long. There are beautiful descriptions of all the Buddha lands, the innumerable beings, the vastness of space and time, and all the other things that are going on, Buddhas coming and going, huge retinues of bodhisattvas making offerings, monks and bodhisattvas asking questions of the Buddha, a whole lot of very helpful teachings interspersed throughout. So I know some of you have been reading it, which is great. Some of you finished it, which is lovely. And if you haven't read it and you don't feel like it, that's fine. But there's a lot in there. So now the Buddha's predicting that each of his senior disciples will become a Buddha. And he gives explanations of all their Buddha names, their Buddha lands, the many kalpas of their lives, the thousands of myriads of beings, of bodhisattvas in their retinues and so on. And then he predicts the Buddhahood of 500 disciples who are arahants. And now we have another parable. The 500 arahants, not the Buddha, but the arahants, tell a story about a man who visits a friend and he gets drunk and he falls asleep. And his friend has to go out on business. So while the man's sleeping, he sews a priceless jewel into the lining of his robe. The man then wakes up and he knows nothing about the jewel. So he leaves the house and begins to travel around, living in poverty, scrounging a living here and there. And eventually he runs into his friend, who says, "Why are you living like this? I sewed a priceless jewel into your robe. You can use it to buy food and clothing and anything you want." And the man is overjoyed. And the disciples say that they're like this drunken man. The Buddha has told them about the great vehicle in the past, but they forgot about it. And they thought they'd attained enlightenment when they'd only found nirvana. And they've been content with this lesser goal. And now the Buddha has woken them up, and they realize that they have the ability to realize the greater goal, Buddhahood, the priceless jewel. They have the priceless jewel, and they're overjoyed. And this is us. This is the teaching of Buddha nature. All beings have Buddha nature. And the Lotus Sutra is perhaps the first illustration of this teaching that we now take for granted. All Buddhas have Buddha nature right within us, no matter who we are. We all have the jewel hidden in our robe. We just need to realize it. It just lies latent within us until we encounter the Dharma, and then we can find it and make use of it. The Buddha says, anyone who hears the Lotus Sutra, even a small part of it, and for a moment thinks of it with joy, will without fail become a Buddha eventually. So here once again the sutra speaks of joy. Anyone who thinks of the Lotus Sutra, or even a small part of it, with joy, will become a Buddha. To take joy in the Dharma, we have to have faith in it. We have to see that it will help us, the flavor of liberation, and this brings us joy. It might not be a spectacular kind of joy, it can be a very quiet joy, knowing that we're on the right path, we're doing the very best thing we could be doing with our life. This is joy. It comes out of our practice of faith. Shariputra, the Buddha's disciple who was foremost in wisdom, was the first of whom the Buddha predicted his Buddhahood, telling him he was already a bodhisattva, and his mind danced for joy. Like the drunken man, he said, he'd forgotten that he was a bodhisattva on the path to Buddhahood. The Buddha had told him this, and he'd forgotten. Of course, many lives ago, the Buddha had told him this. Now the Buddha predicts Buddhahood for all his chief disciples and for large numbers of arahants. It says that someone who makes even a tiny offering to a Buddha, even children playing, or someone who sings even one note in praise of a Buddha, is on the way to Buddhahood. And in fact, we're all on our way to Buddhahood. We're all bodhisattvas, nobody excluded just because they haven't heard the Lotus Sutra. But the Lotus Sutra helps us to know that we have the jewel hidden within our robe. We have that potential. And it really helps us when we know that. And of course, there are bodhisattvas everywhere who've never heard of Buddhism. People simply doing their best to live a good life, to help other beings where they can, trying to keep true to the heart of goodness within themselves. And we see examples of this everywhere. All beings have Buddha nature. All beings have that goodness. It's easy just to focus on the terrible things that happen in our world and miss the quiet working of compassion and goodness, simple goodness, that is there too. If it were not so, we would never have survived this far. It's that simple goodness. People raising their kids as best they can, doing the best they can in their work, helping other beings. As a species, we would never have made it this far if it were not for that. So the Buddha tells all these disciples that they should propagate the Lotus Sutra to help liberate beings so that they'll have faith in it and practice the bodhisattva way and pass it on, so that future people would become Buddhas too, us. People have passed on the Lotus Sutra to us. To have faith in the Lotus Sutra and to revere it is to practice the bodhisattva way. And when you revere it, we're putting it into practice. Otherwise, we're not really revering it. It's just empty words. To really revere something is to practice it. To propagate the Lotus Sutra doesn't mean we go out and proselytize and try to convert people or think that we need to teach people how to live their lives. It's simply by doing our training, meditating, keeping to the precepts, our simple practice. By doing this, we do help the world. We help beings around us. We help in unseen ways. It's not a self being better than other people, giving them something that they lack. I've got the truth and you don't, or anything like that. Everybody has Buddha nature. Everybody has the jewel. But if we know that we have the jewel within ourselves and that everyone else has it too, no matter what it looks like, we can have faith in it and we can live by it and live from our true nature. And this helps everybody. Now the Buddha talks about Devadatta, who has done terrible things. There are a number of stories about him in the Pali Canon. He's tried to create a schism, a split in the Sangha. He's tried to discredit the Buddha. He's even tried to kill the Buddha. But the Buddha says that in a previous life, he himself was a king who left his throne to seek the Dharma, saying that if anyone could teach him the greater vehicle, he would be his servant. And a seer, a holy man in this past life, came and told him that there was a great vehicle sutra called the Lotus Sutra, and he could teach it to him. Well, the king was overjoyed, and immediately he left his throne and followed the seer. Although he'd been a king, he humbly and faithfully served the seer for many years, carrying water and firewood, cooking his meals, and the seer taught him the Lotus Sutra, thus enabling him to become a Buddha. The seer, the Buddha says, was none other than Devadatta in a previous life, who helped the Buddha to realize enlightenment. So the Buddha owes him a debt of gratitude and says that Devadatta will become a Buddha in the future. Well, this is one of my favorite parts of this whole sutra. Even someone who's done terrible things, like Devadatta, can become a Buddha. And the Buddha knows this and is grateful to him. Devadatta was his senior in a previous life. Devadatta had done some training, and the Buddha was just a king, you know. So even someone who's done things like Devadatta, who knows where they've been before? No one is beyond redemption. We are not beyond redemption, no matter what mistakes we might have made in the past. And people who've done terrible things in this life may have done many good deeds in previous lives. We just don't know. It's not for us to judge. No one is wholly evil or wholly perfect. We're all a mixture of good and bad impulses and good and bad karma. It's up to us how we choose to live our lives now. We are not the slaves of our karma. We're not helpless. We can change for better or worse. Devadatta changed for the worse. But in the future, he will change for the better and become a Buddha. And this is a wonderful teaching. No one is cast out or unworthy. Everyone can become a Buddha. We all have the jewel. Now Manjusri appears, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. And he's just come from the Dragon King's palace in the ocean, where he's been teaching the Dharma to countless beings. Somebody asks him if any of them have been able to attain Buddhahood quickly. And he tells them about the Dragon King's daughter, 8 years old, who has deep wisdom and compassion and is capable of realizing Buddhahood. Well, some people are skeptical. How could a little girl, not even fully human, become a Buddha? She's half a dragon. You know? Whereupon, the Dragon King's daughter appears, holding a priceless jewel, the jewel of her faith. Faith is a priceless jewel. Shariputta says it's hard for him to believe that this little dragon girl could become a Buddha. For a start, he says, women can't become Buddhas. Well, the dragon girl just presents her priceless jewel to the Buddha, who immediately accepts it. And she says to Shariputta and the others, was that done quickly or not? Yes, it was done quickly. Well, I can become a Buddha even quicker than that. Whereupon, she turns into a man and becomes a Buddha in a Buddha land, preaching the Dharma to countless beings. Huge numbers of beings see this, and they all understand that they too can become Buddhas. And those who are skeptical about the dragon girl accept and believe what they have just seen. They have to. In the teeth of all their preconceptions and views, there she just did it. This story illustrates that women and even non-human beings can become Buddhas. The dragon girl does have to turn into a man before she becomes a Buddha, but still, it's a revolutionary thought in a culture where women were seen as inferior beings, and they usually had a pretty hard life. They often weren't educated. They were treated as possessions, you know. And this still is the case, of course, to some extent now in some places, but it's better. But back then, women were not considered as capable of much. The Lotus Sutra can seem quite dismissive of women in parts. We talked about this the other day. Sometimes it speaks of Buddha lands, which are flat and paved with jewels, and there are no women. And I think we can take this to mean places where people are not distracted by sensual desire, sexual desire, or any kind of desire. We don't have to judge things by our own present-day standards. We can consider, what is the intention here? How can I understand this in a positive way and not just get upset because it doesn't agree with my views, you know? And as I said the other day, it's kind of like the Buddha lands all being flat, and without mountains and rivers, as the Buddha lands are flat, paved with lapis lazuli, no mountains, no rivers, and there's no women. Well, having no mountains and rivers and being paved with lapis lazuli sounds kind of dull to us, actually. Lapis lazuli, you'd think we'd get kind of tiresome after a bit. But at a time when most people had to go everywhere on foot and negotiate all these mountains and rivers a land that was flat and didn't have these rivers to cross might seem quite appealing. You know, you can just go places. You didn't have to struggle over the mountains or ford difficult rivers. So sometimes when things sound kind of odd to us, or they're hard to understand and accept, we can try to consider where they come from, what the intention is, and not make judgments about them based on our Western present-day views. It's just a different culture, a different time, and things that seem harsh to us may have been considered quite liberal back then. And, as if to emphasize the ability of women, the Buddha's stepmother, Maha Prajapati, who raised him, along with 6,000 nuns, she comes up to the Buddha and he tells her that she will become a Buddha in the future. And so were the 6,000 nuns as her successors. Then Yashodhara, his former wife, comes up and he predicts that she too will become a Buddha. He doesn't say anything about their all having to become men. He treats them just like the others. They will become Buddhas, no doubt about it. And in many other places, the sutra speaks of good men and good women who hear and practice the Lotus Sutra. So there is recognition, quite radical for the time, I think, that women have Buddha nature and can become Buddhas, as we know. This teaching that everyone can become a Buddha, regardless of age or gender or even species, is one of the greatest teachings of the Lotus Sutra. Anyone, everyone has that jewel. Everyone can become a Buddha. Everyone has that potentiality, regardless of anything they might have done in the past. Even Devadatta, who was sort of legendary as a bad person, you know. But he had goodness before. He helped the Buddha. And of course, that goodness was still there within him. Nobody is left out, regardless of our age, our gender, even our species, even anything we may have done, whatever we may think of ourselves. No one is left out. No one is unable to realize the truth. Even if it takes a while, even if it takes lifetimes, it's okay. We have the time. We can do it. We all have our karma to deal with. But in the end, it's not a complete impediment. Yes, Devadatta falls into the Avicii hell, which is not a place you'd want to be, and he will become a Buddha in the future. It's nothing, none of it is damnation forever. None of that. We all have the jewel hidden in our robe. We're all capable of enlightenment. We just need to trust that this is so. Like the lost son who thought he was too lowly and he had to learn to have confidence in his own worth. We are the inheritors of the Buddha's teaching, just to have faith and confidence in that, and not judge ourselves as being unfit, unworthy, left out, beyond the pale, somehow unable to do it. We are the inheritors of the Buddha's teaching. We have the jewel. However, as I said before, this is not to be thought of as getting enlightenment. It's not something we get for ourselves. The Lotus Sutra makes it very clear that it's the practice of a bodhisattva that is the path to true enlightenment. We actualize it by helping beings, not just wanting enlightenment for ourselves. And this is what makes Mahayana the great vehicle, contrasted with the lesser vehicles that make Nirvana the goal, seeking liberation for oneself, which is how they're portrayed. And as I said, the people who actually practice what people might call the lesser vehicles actually do help beings. They do teach and help other people. They're not just thinking about themselves. But this is a kind of a skillful means. Mahayana, the great vehicle. Helping beings, the practice of the bodhisattva. And for us, helping beings is usually in small and modest ways, just as they come to us. We don't have to do something grand and earth-shaking. We don't have to look for some great deed to do. Just living our life the best way we can as it comes to us, helping beings as they come our way and it seems appropriate. Sometimes you can't help. Sometimes it's not appropriate to do something that we might think is good. Sometimes you just have to wait and trust that help will come their way. We don't have to save everybody. We can't. But we can do our best to help as seems good, as is appropriate in our own life. And this is the practice of the Bodhisattva. As great Master Dogen says over and over again, training and enlightenment are one thing. You can't separate them. We practice our innate enlightenment. We practice the way of the Bodhisattva. We aren't just suddenly a Bodhisattva. It's a practice. It's something we do. The way of the Buddha, the way of the Bodhisattva, it's the same thing. We all have the jewel in our robe, whether we see it or not. We can have faith that it's there. We can have faith in the Buddha's teaching that tells us how to use it. We can trust in that and put it into practice. Then the Buddha says, the prerequisite for becoming a Buddha is to hear and practice the Lotus Sutra, the great vehicle, which means to practice the way of the Bodhisattva. And as I said, there's people who've never heard of the Lotus Sutra or heard of Buddhism who just instinctively practice the way of the Bodhisattva. But it's very helpful to hear the Dharma that tells us how to do that. And all those beings present promise that they will do this. They'll practice the Lotus Sutra and pass it on for future generations so that everybody can become Buddha. And tomorrow, we will come to what is generally regarded as the heart of the Lotus Sutra. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.